Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Godhead Complex by James Dashner, narrated by Mark Deakins. Prologue, 31 Years Ago. Night of the Evolution. Nicholas wasn't one to avoid danger, but he didn't exactly go chasing after it either. Except tonight. Testing the latest variant of the cure required Nicholas to walk directly into the Devil's Den, or as the locals in Denver, Colorado called it, Crank Palace. He pulled his black hooded cloak tighter around his face so that no man, woman, or crank could see his features. In his right pocket he clicked two syringes together like Chinese medicine balls as he walked, each hypodermic needle circling the other in a relaxed rhythm as he entered the hallowed gates. Click-clack, click-clack. Screams and wails surrounded the inner walls of the dismal place. Fires ignited from flare pits. Smoke hung in the air and bodies hung in the shadows. No matter how many times he'd visited these hell holes, and he had proudly visited them all, nothing prepared Nicholas for the fresh, curdling cries of desperation he felt vibrating through his whole body when he walked through the gates. Screams of death that Nicholas imagined as souls being cooked from the inside out. He continued to circle the syringes around each other in his pocket. Click-clack. A dance of opportunity for someone tonight within the sacred walls of the original Crank Palace. What better way to rescue the past from itself but to come to Colorado? Nicholas felt someone approaching and looked to the footsteps behind him. A crank stumbled past. He needed to be more careful with how his test went this time around. The last test subject nearly drew unwanted attention. In testing the cure, he needed those possessed with only the purest of minds, and even then, his most recent experiment proved that anyone's intentions, anyone's mind, could change in an instant. A person became a different version of themselves when they were dying, and not just the part of them that slowly turned into a crank. Even when using his telepathic gift, Nicholas found that a person could say almost anything when they themselves were closer and closer to the end, but when given the chance to live, that's when their own beliefs, fears, and desires came back into awareness quicker than what could be controlled, quicker than what was safe. Nicholas needed to be more selective this time, and he wanted someone past the gone. If this worked as well as it worked last time, he needed to be sure the cured crank, reverted back to healthy DNA, could stay under his study for years to come without waiver. Nicholas didn't know how long the cure held true. A year? 2 years? A lifetime? He wasn't sure of that, but he knew the variant within the syringes in his pocket worked more quickly than imaginable, but might someday wear off just as quickly. Many more studies were needed. A crank more human than not walked past Nicholas and let out a deep-bellied groan, a sound that could have been from hunger or the vocalized grief of having his deepest memories resurface, a groan of one's sanity slipping away. Nicholas walked on. He wouldn't choose a walking crank, no. He needed to choose a crank more dead than alive. One on the ground who writhed in pain, perhaps, but one close enough to death that the promise he or she made to Nicholas would forever be kept. He had tested variants of the cure on so many cranks that he had lost count. Of course, somewhere hidden in the journals of his library were the observational notes, the number of experiments and trials that attempted to prove his hypothesis right time and time again. That DNA changes from the flare could be reversed, and that the same cure that erased the flare could unlock a multitude of dormant DNA in the human body. Dead-end genomes that scientists had called junk DNA for centuries in their scholarly journals. Nicholas tried to hold back his smile, thinking of the discovery, but how could something so monumental as evolution not make him feel like a god? But it was a fleeting feeling, to be sure. Click-clack. He circled the two syringes together as he watched the cranks before him. A failed experiment was a failed experiment. Successes were only temporary. He reported back to the villa what they needed to change in the next batch. Side effects, advanced symptoms, deaths. Most deaths happened naturally. Not everyone's DNA was reprogrammable, and not everyone's body could take the cure. Death was a natural part of scientific advancements, even those deliberately caused by the advancer, as when Nicholas's last crank subject shouted about the cure within the walls of Crank Palace and put Nicholas's life in danger.
"I'm turning back! My hands! Look! He's cured me! This man is a god!"
The cure itself was at risk as soon as one muttered of its existence. The crank had promised to stay silent and obedient, but as soon as his life became his own again, he betrayed his own thoughts, and Nicholas had to end the life he brought back that night. Easy come, easy go, you might say. Nicholas wanted to test on someone past the gone, someone easier to influence, manipulate, control. Nicholas wandered toward an alley behind the west side buildings as it started to rain, and he squinted at the sight of a crank on the ground with limbs as limp as a butchered deer. But huddled over the crank sat another, and Nicholas couldn't test on two subjects at once. He tightened the hood of his robe again, but the falling rain enhanced his telepathy, and he couldn't help but overhear the woman's thoughts.
"I'd take this pain from you if I could. I wish I was infected with this, not you."
Nicholas stopped walking and looked on from the shadows of the alley. Why the hell was someone healthy inside Crank Palace? Nicholas wasn't infected, but his presence would be swift and purposeful. This figure in front of him seemed to be mourning her long-lost love. Had she no fear of the flare? The only reason Nicholas proved fearless was because he had been a test subject of his own unique study, something the villa knew nothing about. Using one of the variants as a preventative, Nicholas knew it couldn't harm him with the flare, but might just protect him from it. What he didn't expect were the powerful side effects, weird and frightening things like telepathy. Human DNA was a funny thing. For a crank, it was about healing. For the non-infected, the cure resequenced DNA structures that had been left abandoned in mankind, opening new pathways and abilities whose potential had been lost or never discovered, like clicking in the last pieces of a puzzle. But Nicholas's gift of telepathy was also his curse. He could trust no one.
"Can you help us?" asked the voice huddled over the crank, writhing in pain.
Nicholas read her mind again.
"Please, please, say you can help us."
He suddenly felt naked, as though she could see right through his cloak to his hand that held the cure.
"Help us,"
she spoke with an unwarranted confidence. Nicholas was drawn to her assuredness, her fearlessness. He walked from the shadows closer.
"What makes you think I can help you?"
"Because you're not infected. I can tell you're different."
Nicholas danced with her thoughts again as the rain came down harder.
"And why do you think that?" he responded.
"Your eyes. Please help us. I'll do anything to save him."
Nicholas leaned in and asked an impossible question.
"Would you sacrifice your life for his?"
Without hesitation, she answered,
"Yes."
He changed his mind. He'd do something unplanned that night. Something he had never done before. Once he saved the wretched crank on the pavement of the alley, he'd also inject the fearless companion with the cure and study them both, bring them into his inner circle and create the future one day at a time. One infected, one not.
"I'll do anything to save him. Please," she whispered without tears. "Just tell me what you want me to do."
Nicholas palmed the two syringes in his pocket.
"I'll ask for your silence. Not just now, but as we leave the walls and for every single day beyond that. Whatever happens.
You have my word.
Her thoughts and intentions aligned.
Can you save him?
I can try. But I'll have to inject you too, just in case you have an asymptomatic infection.
Nicholas wouldn't tell her of the DNA resequencing she'd undergo, needing to know how her gifts evolved naturally, if they evolved at all.
Anything, please. You're a godsend. Thank you.
God is nothing but a complex. We are all gods. You'll soon find out.
Nicholas gently tapped the inside of her arm to find the vein. He wondered how the sequencing might align her unique strands of DNA.
You'll come with me after this, to New Petersburg, so that I can keep you under observation.
Alaska?
That's a little far from Colorado. Yes, Alaska.
Nicholas engaged the syringe slowly so as not to flood her body too quickly with the cure.
Not bad in a burg.
He smiled and watched her face relax.
You mustn't make a sound when I inject him next. Not a cry, not a scream, not a shout for the world to hear. If you mutter anything louder than a sigh of relief, I will have to...
Of course.
She watched on, and Nicholas pivoted to the crank with skin so thick the needle needed extra force to penetrate.
What's your name?
She asked.
Nicholas.
Thank you, Nicholas. We'll forever be in your debt. My name is...
Doesn't matter.
Nicholas stood up from the damp ground and put the emptied needles back in his pocket. Click, clack.
From now on, you'll be known as Alexandra, and he'll be known as Mikhail.
Part 1. Natural Selection.
I don't know what awaits us after they're gone. I guess I might meet my maker, as someone in the glade once said. Or I might just meet myself again. My whole self. Memories, real name, all that. Maybe at the end, the broken pieces of life all come together. Maybe they'll make sense. Or maybe they won't. Maybe it's a little of both.
The Book of Newt. Chapter 1. Forging Ahead. 1. Isaac. The flames danced higher from their nightly fire, and Isaac watched as his friends carried on in a circle around the camp as if they were all back on the island after a feast, as if everything were the same as it ever was. But no. Everything had changed. He could see that change most in Jackie's face, how the loss of Lacey and Carson took the spark out of her eyes, or maybe killing a bald-headed half-crank with her bare hands changed her. Either way, with every mile they traveled closer to the coast and farther away from the broken grief walker, away from Lacey and Carson, Jackie seemed further and further away too. She didn't talk about what happened all those weeks ago, and Isaac understood that perfectly. He never wanted to talk about losing his mom, dad, and sister either. Talking about it made it real. And it didn't need to feel any more real than the empty space that remained in their place. Isaac half smiled and half frowned at Jackie, the only way he knew how to send a sympathetic but supportive look, letting her see that he knew the grief and torment of what she was going through. It wasn't just the loss of her friends that Isaac understood all too well, but the feeling of what Old Man Frypan once called survivor's guilt, the feeling of still being alive when those you loved weren't. Jackie half smiled and half frowned right back at him.
Hey, who wants to hear a spider bark?
Dominic stood up to stretch, and before Miyoko could push him out of the circle, he did it again. He let one rip. Since escaping the Bergs, Dominic's gas had become the biggest weapon of destruction the group had to avoid. Trish glared at Dominic. She had a steadfast rule of not farting near the campfire.
You're going to catch us all on fire one day, you know.
Trish rolled her eyes and then inched closer to Sedina, intertwining Sedina's fingers with her own. After Sedina and Isaac were kidnapped, Isaac couldn't help but notice Trish tethered herself more than ever to Sedina, in whatever ways she could. Isaac understood that, too. He was thankful for the group, but he himself felt untethered, as if a bad wind could come along and just blow everything away. Maybe because they slept outside as if they were on the run. He missed the safety of the yurt he'd built back home. He looked around at the trees and available resources. It'd take some time, but he could build a shelter here for everyone. "Thanks for dinner, old man," Isaac said as he collected the carved wood they used for bowls and helped clean up. Isaac had never seen Old Man Frypan happier than when they settled in between the mountains, eating rabbits and plants and cooking for everyone when he had the energy. Min-Ho leaned back to stretch. "You even managed to make Roxy's stew taste better, which I swore wasn't possible."
"Some kind of spiky herb he added from the forest," Roxy added as she helped Isaac clean up.
"It's called rosemary. I don't know how I remember that, but I do."
Old Man Frypan inched closer to the fire. Roxy took all the bowls from Isaac and stacked them together.
"I'll forage first thing in the morning, go out a little farther east and see what I can find up there." "I'll go with you and find some squirrels to hunt."
Orange tugged at the annoying burrs that had gotten stuck in her hair from hunting earlier.
"Ow! These things really hurt for how small they are."
The weeds, vines, and brush had weapons of their own in this part of the world. The harshest things back on the island were rocks, water, jellyfish, and the weather. But out here, there were too many dangers to count. Every day it seemed like Isaac learned something new to watch out for. Besides cranks and giant killing machines.
"How's your insect bite?"
Isaac asked Dominic.
"I don't think it bit me. I think it was a stinger."
Dominic looked at his bicep.
"Kinda looked like a bee, but that sucker was way bigger. Do you think grievers can shrink down and fly?"
Everyone but Old Man Frypan laughed.
"Grievers are nothing to snark at," the grizzled veteran said,
and the group hushed out of respect.
"Maybe the bees bite out here?"
Miyoko asked.
"I don't see any teeth marks."
Dominic examined his arm even closer. Roxy went over to check on the poor guy.
It's not ants, so you'd have more of them with the same marks. Sounds like it could have been a murder hornet. That's not good."
"A murder hornet? Is my arm going to fall off?"
Dominic looked at Roxy, concerned, and Isaac couldn't tell if he actually believed it.
"Am I going to die?" "I bet that sucked the gas right out of you."
Trish laughed until Sedina elbowed her. Roxy held in her own laugh.
"I'm just messing with you. It'll probably be sore for a few days, but you'll be fine."
She looked closely at Dominic's arm, then patted it lovingly.
"Lucky he didn't get you more than once."
Miyoko and Trish combed their fingers through Orange's ginger locks and removed the spiky balls of nature that had attached themselves, tossing her hair into a bird's nest. Despite Min-Ho and Orange being more intimidating than Ms. Cowan at times, Isaac was glad to have their leadership within the group. Without Orange, they'd all be dead. He sat back down by the fire, taking everything in. The wind kicked up, and the sparks of the fire reminded him of the sparks in the forge. He'd give anything to go back to being a blacksmith apprentice at home. But he had a feeling that even life on the island wasn't exactly life on the island anymore. The fire made Isaac feel safe, and the smoke had a way of cleansing the group enough that they all didn't smell like the hammers of hell in between steam baths. The wind pushed again, longer and harder.
"Anyone else notice it's getting colder at night?"
Isaac had only felt it in the last few days, but right before dusk the temperature dropped further and each whoosh of the wind lasted longer than the day before.
"Yeah, it sure is," Dominic answered.
Ms. Cowan inched closer to the fire.
"Never had this kind of chill back home."
The flames flickered and highlighted the shadows of stress on Cowan's face. Along with the drop in temperature, she had been uncomfortably quiet the last few nights. Isaac imagined that the weight of her decision to leave the island and to go against the government must have continued to weigh on her, especially after losing Wilhelm and Alvarez. But there was no way she could have known the trip would result in so many deaths.
"You think everyone back home is doing okay?" Isaac asked her,
but Cowan didn't blink. Slowly, one by one, heads looked up in her direction.
"Miss Cowan?"
Isaac asked again. Even Orange, Minho, and Roxy, who had never been to the island, waited on Cowan's response, but she just stared at the fire.
"Mom?"
Sedina shouted over the fire. Miss Cowan finally blinked.
"What's that, dear?" "Do you think everyone back home is doing okay?"
Isaac asked again. Cowan looked at him as if it were a trick question.
"Yes, of course. They're all fine, I'm sure."
But the way her voice lowered slightly at "they're all fine" gave Isaac a pang in his gut, a pang that said it was them, the 11 souls sitting around the fire just then, who weren't fine.
"How many bergs are on your island?" Minho asked, while adding wood to the fire, and everyone from back home looked at each other.
Trish replied,
"None of us knew what that thing you call a berg was until we flew on it."
"No, we didn't have bergs on the island. The islanders weren't meant to leave."
Cowan's last words seemed coated with regret. Isaac felt the mood shift along with the cold air, but Cowan finally snapped out of her trance.
"Look, if we hadn't left the island, Lacey, Carson, Wilhelm, and Alvarez would still be alive. I know that."
She took a slow, deliberate breath.
"But we owed it to humanity to work for a cure, and if we'd succeeded, we could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives, maybe millions. Who knows?"
"If there's that many people left,"
Roxy responded in the grimmest voice possible.
"We can still do that,"
Miyoko said while she finished the braid in Orange's hair.
"The villa Kletter talked about wasn't far from where we were when we arrived on land. Maybe a few miles?"
She paused before adding,
"I think she said it was a 2-day hike before she..."
And Isaac knew why she stopped talking when she did. Because there's no polite way to say, "before Kletter got her throat slit open." Sedina chimed in at that.
"Yeah, we were supposedly really close to the villa, and that's why Letty kidnapped us and kept saying the same thing, not to trust the people there or Kletter."
"You trust a word that came out of Letty's or Timon's mouth?"
Isaac didn't think he had to remind his best friend that the two crazy people who forcibly took them probably weren't the best ones to take advice from. Sure, there were moments when Isaac thought that maybe Letty and Timon were helping to protect them from something, the way they allowed them to leave clues for the rest of the group to stay on their trail. But they'd never fully explained what the so-called evolution was or how people could die.
"I vote we go home,"
Dominic said, and a silence fell over the entire group, even from Minho and Orange, whose home sounded awful. The fire crackled.
"We could all go with Minho to Alaska," Roxy added optimistically,
but the mention of Alaska made Old Man Frypan stand up and leave the circle. He had understandably seen enough of that place to last several lifetimes.
"I didn't live this long to go back to the maze. I'd rather die right here than step one foot in that godforsaken country."
After his airing of grievances, he sat back down.
"Some wounds aren't meant to be reopened."
What might happen if they did go back home, Isaac wondered. The way they left on the maize cutter, mysteriously leaving after the whole island got knockout drunk from poisoned wine, might have seemed like the best solution at the time, but what would Cowan say if they went back? Lie and blame it all on Kletter?
"She poisoned everyone on the island and kidnapped us."
Or be honest and say,
"Hey, we tried to save the world, but it turns out there's a lot more to it. A bunch of scientists wanted us dead. The cranks have evolved, and some of us escaped thanks to 2 orphans from the Remnant Nation. No big deal. We're back."
And even so, what if by returning to the island they only caused more people like Kletter to come after Sedina and the islanders again? The gladers of old wanted to protect the immunes and their descendants from ever being found. It seemed selfish to put everyone back home at risk again. But what did that mean? Spending the rest of their lives on the run?
All right, then. Should we put it to a vote? Cowan asked,
and just like that, the nightly campfire improbably turned into some kind of government meeting. Isaac had never wanted part in any kind of decision-making. He'd just wanted to learn how to forge and be a blacksmith. But his throat felt itchy with the pressure of needing to speak up.
"I motion we move to vote," Dominic said as he stood up, sounding like a stranger.
Isaac wasn't sure what he wanted to do when they reached the coast. Stay in the wilderness and build a yurt? Go home to apologize for ever leaving? Go to Alaska and finish some mission they didn't understand? See the maze of old? Go to the villa to find the scientists? It was too much, as usual, for him to process. Sedina also stood up.
Mom, can't we just...
No.
We had a democracy at home, and we'll have one here. Cowan acted as if this entire trip hadn't revolved around Sedina and the possibility that her blood might change the world. Also, poisoning your people because they might not agree with you wasn't exactly what Isaac would call a democracy.
We'll vote by show of hands. Only vote once.
Isaac looked at Sedina and mouthed the words,
I'm sorry.
2. Sedina. At times, she had been glad to have her mom on the trip with her, but this was not one of those times. Why couldn't they discuss the decision for a few days and present options, and listen to everyone's opinions? Why did her mom always have to do everything in such a public forum, like the poisoning at the amphitheater? Sedina never would have brought the entire town together just to poison them all and then sneak away and pretend to be taken forcibly. If the truth wasn't an option, why couldn't they have disappeared in the middle of the night on the ship and left a note about their true intentions? If a cure was such a good and noble thing, then why hide what they did? It shouldn't have mattered that some of the island Congress disagreed. That's always the case. Sedina just wanted logical sense sometimes. Like now. Why couldn't they sleep on it and have an open discussion in the morning? But her idea of what was fair didn't matter. It never did with her mom. Sedina couldn't control what happened next any more than she could control having special blood. She could only hope her friends chose the best option, whatever that might be. Letty and Timon thought Kletter was evil enough that they killed her the minute they had the chance. They could have killed Isaac and everyone else in the group except Sedina if they wanted to make it easier on themselves to manipulate her, but instead, they let everyone live. And weren't they working with the Remnant Nation somehow? They never killed anyone else, despite having the chance to do so. It was the one thing Sedina kept coming back to because she couldn't shake how fast they'd killed Kletter. Because the villa was bad.
Vote with me, Sedina whispered to Trish. Wherever you go, I'll go.
Trish clasped her fingers around Sedina's and held her hand fiercely, so tight that Sedina's knuckles hurt.
Wherever you are, I'll be, she whispered back.
Sedina's mom cleared her throat.
Let's handle this like a proper vote, meaning no outbursts, no arguing. Whatever has the votes will be what we do, period.
Understood? Everyone in the group nodded their heads but said nothing. Sedina couldn't tell if her mom was being more of a mom at this moment or more of a senator. Both titles sometimes put off a because-I-said-so tone to them, something Sedina could have done without. What if the majority vote isn't the best way to spend their time? All those in favor of staying here, raise your hands, Sedina's mom asked. Old Man Frypan's hand shot up as if it were connected to a shooting star in the sky. Jackie's hand joined his arm in the air, but theirs were the only votes for staying, and once the senator pointed at them each as if to say, "Your vote has been seen," Old Man Frypan and Jackie's hands lowered.
"Why do you want to stay here?" Dominic whispered to Jackie,
but Sedina's mom hushed them all.
"All those in favor of going back home, raise your hands," Sedina's mom announced next,
but Dominic's hand was the only one to go up. He looked at Jackie with a frown as if her vote and his combined...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?